you know that less than 1% of all the water on Earth is available for human consumption? And let's face it, a lot of that isn't so great. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. And in the studio with us today are Kevin Masaryk and Lisa Lehman. Kevin is an outreach specialist for the Center of Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point. And Lisa is the Private Water Section Chief for the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We'll talk with them about the state of our drinking water and what we can do to help protect it. But what questions and concerns do you have about drinking water? We always like you to be part of our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So Kevin, Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today again.
Good morning, Jim.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. Now, before we even start, let's just talk about what you actually do for your agencies. Lisa, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Sure. At the Department of Natural Resources, our Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater does a number of things related to protecting the drinking water for Wisconsinites. We develop standards for groundwater quality. We work with public drinking water systems to make sure they're monitoring their drinking water quality and distributing it to all their customers properly. And then we work with well drillers and pump installers to make sure that private wells are constructed properly and they're sampled when they need to be.
Okay. And Kevin?
And I'm an outreach specialist with Extension based out of the UW-Stevens Point campus. Mm-hmm. And what our center does is works a lot with private well owners. One of the things that we want them to do is test their water. When we encourage people to do that, though, we find that oftentimes they have a lot of questions about what do the results mean? You know, what are the next steps if they identify a problem? And that's really what my programming focuses on, is helping them understand why it's important to test, what those test results mean, and then any sort of corrective measures that might be options for improving their well water quality.
Because those results can be a little confusing, right?
They sure yeah. can.
Okay, well, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that Governor Evers declared 2019 the year of clean drinking water. Why was that so important for him, and why is it important for our state?
Well, I think a lot of there's been an increasing conversation among citizens, among legislators, and the governor about concerns that they have over where their drinking water is coming from and what the quality is. For people that live in cities or are served by municipal water supply, lead has been a big topic. And the service lines that go from a water main into someone's home, if they contain lead, that can put lead into the water that people are drinking and have health effects. If you live in rural areas, nitrates has been one of the topics of conversation that often comes from agricultural sources and can potentially get in and contaminate private wells. So whether people get their drinking water from a public system or private water supply, there's just increasing awareness, I think, of the contaminants that are out there, and people have concerns about what they can do about it.
So does that mean that there's going to be any extra money for you and what you're doing, or is it just increased awareness?
Well, the governor's budget contains some items to try to address both the lead and the nitrate issues that I've talked about. Speaker Voss has formed a water quality task force that's gathering information and also trying to think about what actions can be taken both to protect land use that impacts groundwater and also to protect those drinking water systems.
Okay. And again, we're talking about clean drinking water. If you have any questions, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And we always take email at ideas@wpr.org. And we do have a caller on the line right now. So let's go right there. James in Northbrook, Illinois, what thoughts do you have?
Well, I'm actually a hydrologist and a geologist, too, and I have a lot of concerns. I acquired a natural landscaping philosophy. I don't use any chemicals on my natural plants. I have very little lawn. But with all the chemicals that are put on lawns and things like that, I mean, 100 years from now, these chemicals and everything – they're going to saturate the ground, go through the ground to the aquifers, and, well, we have wells that take our drinking water from the aquifers. So I think we're planting seeds for serious future problems. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, thank you, James. Kevin?
So excellent points. Anything we do on the landscape does have the potential to impact the water that sits below. And with groundwater, sometimes what happens today might take years or decades to reach down into the aquifer where somebody might be getting their water from a private well, or maybe a municipality is getting their water for its customers. And there are things that, you know, we can do to try and improve or protect that resource, and land use is a big part of that. While it would be great if we could perform agricultural activity without impacting the resource, we know that no matter how well we do that, a lot of times some of those chemicals, whether it's fertilizers or whether it's pesticides, some of those things are going to find their way into our water supply. So it's really important that whether it's lawn care or agricultural activity, we're doing the best we can to follow best management practices. It's also important for people to realize that sometimes even our best isn't going to be good enough to keep groundwater pristine or below standards. And sometimes we have to think about how do we go above and beyond what's recommended to really look out for that resource. And that can be challenging sometimes.
And speaking of resources, and where can people turn to you, Lisa, if they have questions about what's the best way to treat this or how do we stop it?
Sure. If you're a private well owner, we have a lot of resources on DNR's website for information about how to test your well to find out what your water quality is, how to maintain your well, things to look out for in protecting that land use that you can do on your own property. The areas that... Kind of following up on Kevin's comments, and appreciate James' question and concerns, some of the things that DNR and others have researched recently regarding agricultural activities show that there can be more tools developed for farmers to be aware of how much fertilizer they're putting on, how much they need. And farmers are getting better at evaluating that and making sure they're not using more than they need, so that there is that the ability for them to maintain their business activities and hopefully have minimal impacts on groundwater.
Okay, great. Yeah. And thank you for that question, James. Did you follow up, Kevin?
Just following up, there are parts of Wisconsin that are more sensitive as well. Areas where you have sandy soils tend to be more susceptible. Areas where you might have thin soils that overlie cracked or fractured rock also tend to be more sensitive. So being aware of the geology as well as the land use are really important.
And where can someone get that information? I mean, you can tell if your soil's sandy, but...
Sure. So the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey is the institution charged with kind of cataloging some of those geologic and groundwater resources. That's one area where you can go to learn about your local soils or geology. There's also the Wisconsin Well Water Viewer, which is an online interactive tool that allows people to go and see what's known about private well water quality around the state. And a lot of times you can zoom into your municipality or your location and get some valuable information.
Oh, great tool. How do we find it?
How I usually find it is in a search engine, I'll type in Wisconsin Well Water Viewer.
And it should pop up.
And it should pop up.
Okay, great. Sounds good. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Joe in Appleton with a question. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I have a 6-inch drilled well, and I had the water tested at the State Lab of Hygiene, and I found to have the iron-producing bacteria. We get a little, the... kind of rust-colored coatings on plumbing fixtures and so forth. Was thinking about shocking it to try and take care of that problem. I've gone online to see how to do it and was thinking about doing it with the dilute bleach solution, dumping it down the well. And I'd just like to get kind of an opinion as to whether... this is something that I should do or have it professionally done.
Thanks for your question, Joe. And first of all, congratulations on testing your well. We really encourage every private well owner to test their well every year for bacteria and nitrates. And it sounds like you did that. If you get a bacteria positive result, that can mean that there's something to do with the integrity of your well that's maybe compromised. Maybe there's a crack in the cap or something like that. So you do want to disinfect it before you would drink that water again. If you've got the iron bacteria that you described, that can be kind of stubborn. It may resist efforts to disinfect it. There are techniques that licensed well professionals will use involving other components in addition to the typical chlorine that can help try to break through the slime layer that those bacteria form. So I would encourage you to use a well professional for that who's got some experience in working with that type of bacteria. And it may be something that, you know, from time to time over the years might recur. The good news is that's not going to be an acute health hazard for you, but just something that can affect your well performance. And I would encourage you to hire a professional to help you with that problem.
Now, a lot of homeowners have water softeners and water filters, and how good are those at getting those contaminants out?
Treatment is a lot of times very effective, but it's really important that you know what you're treating for, particularly if you have a health-related concern or contaminant in your water. Treatment can sometimes be very specific for certain contaminants, so you want to know what it is your concern is, and then buy or install the device that is certified to remove that particular contaminant. So, for instance, a water softener is going to be very specific for things like calcium and magnesium. Water softeners will not have any ability to reduce something like nitrate. You know, the carbon filter, the refrigerator filter that you have, or the pure pitcher filter that you have, does, you know, a certain amount for taste and odor issues, but it won't remove something like nitrate or arsenic. So knowing what you're trying to treat for is really critical to purchasing the right device.
Totally makes sense. Let's go back to the phones. Up next, Randy in Ripon. Hi, Randy.
Hi. Good morning. My town that I live in, they sent out some paperwork on the city water, and they showed that we had it's acceptable levels, but it was a glyphosate, which is basically Roundup. And I just find that a little disconcerting, because if it's in our groundwater there, I'm sure it's elsewhere. Our bedrock tends to be mostly limestone and sandstone in that area. But I just wonder what your guest has to say about that. Thank you.
Okay. Kevin? Or
So when we look at common pesticides used in Wisconsin, DAGCAP, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, is the regulatory agency for those chemicals. They do investigations around the state that identify some of the more common chemicals. The most common pesticides we tend to find in groundwater would be parent compounds of metolachlor, alachlor, atrazine, or its metabolites. Glyphosate is not something we find a lot of in groundwater, because it does kind of photodegrade and break down pretty readily. So the fact that they found it in Ripon's water, if that's true, is a little bit rare, but it could make sense if you live in kind of a fractured or a karstic type landscape, in which you might have rapid infiltration of surface water into that system. So it's not, unfortunately, it's not unusual to find various chemicals or pesticides in water supplies. Usually when we find them, they're below any health-based standard, but still added reason to be really cautious with how we use those chemicals on the landscape.
Okay, great. Thank you. We're talking with Elisa Lehman and Kevin Masaryk about drinking water. Our on-air producer today is Jane Rotunda, and Nigel O'Shea is technical director. What questions do you have about your drinking water? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Coming up at 11:45, we'll take a look at what to expect at this year's Energy Fair. That's next on the Ideas Network. But right now, we're talking about safe drinking water. And we're going to go right to the phones. We've got lots of people that have questions. Let's go to Vern in Boyd. Hi, Vern.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I've been studying water since 1970, and I just discovered one thing that I have to – I'm not advertising – The Great Culling of Our Water, it's on Amazon, it's a documentary, and it talks about fluoridic acid. which is a byproduct of phosphate fertilizer production. This stuff is put into our water because they don't know what to do with it, and they call it fluoridated water. Well, initially they used to use sodium fluoride, period, back in 1952, but this fluoridic acid is a whole different ball game, and it causes, interferes with your iodine system. So it's a really serious issue, and, you know, I could get into all kinds of problems
okay.
with your water.
All right. Well, thanks, Vern. I think we can deal with that first part of it, which, Lisa, you want to talk about the fluoride?
Sure. I'm not familiar with the particular fluoridic acid that the caller's calling about. I do know that certainly for public health reasons, mm-hmm. a lot of our communities will add fluoride to water for our teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a long practice. It sounds like maybe he's learning or reading some information about some breakdown products about that. I'm not too familiar. Kevin, do you have any knowledge about that?
I would just say when it comes to private wells, we do encourage people with children to test their well for fluoride, with the intent that most of the time fluoride levels are really low or non-existent in well water. And that information is useful for doctors and dentists to actually provide some sort of fluoride supplement to those people on private wells that might not be benefiting from the fluoridation of municipal water.
Okay. And there isn't anything that's showing that fluoride is bad for us that we know of? Or
above fluoride's interesting that above a certain level, and it can cause kind of mottling of the teeth.
Okay.
But then there's the alternative, which is too little, and your teeth aren't strong enough. So there's
sure.
this interesting kind of thing with fluoride where you're kind of trying to reach that happy medium.
Okay. And it's monitored by the municipal governments then?
Right. If it's a public drinking water supply, mm-hmm. they may be adding fluoride. So that's why a dentist is going to want to know where you get your, you know, where their patients.
Sure.
What water they drink so mm-hmm. they know if they need fluoride supplements
good
or not.
Good information. All right. Let's go back to the phones then. We've got Kevin in Kewaunee who has a question. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, this is Keith, I think.
I'm sorry. And I can't read apparently today. It's Keith.
Anyway, in Kewaunee County, about a third of our private wells that are tested are contaminated, and Dr. Mark Borchardt of the USDA has told us that animal egg contributes to those problems, and actually proximity to manure lagoons is a factor that contributes to pollution of our private wells. And I'm on a private septic system, and that has to be pumped every 3 years and inspected. In fact, I put in a new one a couple years ago. But manure pits get permitted, and once they're permitted and constructed, they're never inspected or pumped out or looked at for leakage. Now, we got a court case coming up here in Kewaunee County going to the Wisconsin State Supreme Court because there was a permitting requirement for a farm to put in monitoring wells because he was putting in a huge manure lagoon. And that was fought. The farm went ahead with expansions, and this has been going on for at least 3 or 4 years. And yet there's no monitoring of those manure pits that just contain millions of gallons of really bad sewage that's got all kinds of bugs in it that most of the time don't even get tested for when you look at the antibiotics and other things that go in those pits from the animals and get into our drinking water.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Keith. Lisa?
Yeah, thank you for the call, Keith. You live in an area, Kewaunee County, that's that fractured bedrock material that Kevin was describing earlier with not very much topsoil over it. So it is a part of the state where the groundwater is very vulnerable to the activity that's happening on the landscape. And it's also a farming part of the state. So the concerns that you're raising are very important and very much an issue in Kewaunee County. Manure pits, if they're part of a confined animal feeding operation, are regulated by DNR. And so there are standards that have to be met for their construction, and they do have to be maintained and pumped out from time to time. You know, they don't have an indefinite volume that they can hold. They are required to be inspected regularly by the farmers. DNR does compliance inspections. But again, if it's in that vulnerable geology, there is always a greater risk of potential for contamination.
Okay, thank you very much, Keith. And we did have an email from Nick. He said that he lives in a city where they test for lead. His samples have come back over the legal limit. Now, when he takes his sample for giving the test, as long as it is a hard water source, does it really matter the location, like the bathroom sink compared to a basement basin, basin sink? Theoretically, he can drink out of all of them.
Yeah, good question. And the city is probably going to be working with you if you're a city dweller and you're getting your water through that municipal water supply. They'll probably be working with you and advise you where to collect your sample. Usually they'll advise to take it from the kitchen tap because that's where most people drink mm-hmm. from. But certainly you could, or, you know, kids taking a bath could drink out of the bath water. If the lead source is in the service line that's coming from the street into the house, any of those taps will, you know, pretty much give the same result. If for some reason there's lead in certain parts of the plumbing, they could potentially give it a different result. But I think a good rule of thumb would be to use the tap that you'd be most likely to be drinking from.
Okay, great. We're talking with Kevin Masaryk. He is a outreach specialist for the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point. And Lisa Lehman, she is the private water section chief for the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Do you have a question about drinking water? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we do have open lines. But let's go to Brad in Madison. Hi, Brad.
Yeah, I'd like to see an end to the use of PFAS chemicals. It's used in, like, firefighting foam and military-based across the country. It is poisoning people, especially on the military bases. I mean, I saw one case where there's like 16 cases of cancer in one family. It also causes developmental problems. They've known for a decade or more about the hazards of this, and they just keep on using it. And I just like to say, as a former military person, the military is not a good neighbor. There's Superfund sites all across the country. There's, you know, Agent Orange, burn pits, depleted uranium. They will poison you just because they don't want to spend money to fix the problem.
Okay. So, all right. Well, thank you, Brad. I appreciate that. Lisa?
Yeah, thanks, Brad, for bringing up this topic. This has been in the news a lot lately. So PFAS, that's an acronym for perfluorinated alkylated substances or polyfluorinated alkylated substances. These are industrial chemicals. They've been used in a lot of industrial and consumer products since the 1950s. And one of the qualities that makes them very good for using in a nonstick pan is also the quality that makes them persistent in our environment. They don't break down easily. They can be, their use maybe has been discontinued for 20 or 30 years at any given manufacturing or military site, but the compound can still remain in the soil and in the groundwater. So it's been an emerging area for the state and the country, understanding the health, trying to understand the health effects of consuming these. EPA has issued a health advisory for two of the most common PFAS category chemicals. They're not regulated at this time. In other words, there's not a standard that any municipal water system has to meet in terms of the PFAS. So it's an area that at the federal level, EPA is studying and thinking about developing that standard. What we're finding around in Wisconsin is some industries are voluntarily testing for PFAS in their areas. Some municipalities like Madison have done some testing in their wells for PFAS. And so a lot of people are trying to learn more. The military also at their sites has been doing some testing. But it's kind of an emerging area in terms of understanding where these chemicals are, what harm they're causing, and what to do about it.
Okay. And Kevin, is that something that shows up in well testing?
It would not be a test that most people would be running on their private wells. And there's not, for something like bacteria or nitrate, there's a whole host of labs that would be able to perform that test. For something like PFAS, there's a very select few that would have that capability. And it's not something we'd encourage homeowners to do unless somebody like DNR were telling him to do that.
Okay. And let's go to another email. We had Dan sent in that he knows many places around the world that use rainwater catchment systems as a main supply of water. Is this an economical process, and does the water require filtering or treatment to be considered safe drinking water?
When it comes to the question about economical, I think it depends probably on where you live. Yeah. If you live in a water-starved area where the water rates are a lot higher, it might be economical. Mm-hmm. In some place like Wisconsin, I think if you looked at how much we actually pay, you'd be surprised at how cheap our water is. I mean, pennies for gallons of water. So it is possible. I know people do that. There are some considerations that you'd want to be aware of. Mainly, you know, sanitary or bacteriological concerns. You know, people that would use that type of system would be encouraged to have some sort of probably chlorine residual to make sure that the water didn't contain or develop bacteria, and it would also prevent kind of smell and odor issues. So with that process comes some considerations that would mean you'd probably want to filter or treat that water, even for things like showering or flushing the toilet, just because of some of the aesthetic concerns that could come along with using that as a water source.
Okay, so do some research before
for sure.
you start doing
yeah.
it. Let's go back to the phones. And again, if you want to join us, our number is 1-800-642-1234, and we do have open lines. Let's go to Lisa in Janesville. Hi, Lisa. You have a question.
I'm a first-time private well user. We just built a house 6 months ago, and my well tested high in nitrates, 14 parts per million. I just want to know how that's going to affect myself and I guess my dog. I'm not sure if it has an effect on animals like that and what I can do to reduce the nitrates in that.
So when it comes to nitrate, the health standard for that is 10 milligrams per liter. The health concerns are mainly for infants less than six months of age and women who are pregnant or may become pregnant, concerns relating to birth defects. Methemoglobinemia is a condition that can affect infants. We also encourage everyone to avoid long-term consumption of nitrate above 10, even though the health studies are a little bit less certain or less clear when it comes to adults. There's enough evidence that we do urge some caution when the levels get above 10 for all populations. When it comes regarding to what you can do about elevated nitrate, you just drilled the well. So, you know, sometimes drilling a new well is one way to try and get a safer water source. In this case, I'm sure the thought of drilling a new well is not on your radar screen.
No, I'm sure.
So then the next step would be looking at some sort of treatment. And for nitrate, reverse osmosis is probably the most common treatment method that people would go with. It treats water at your drinking water source. It's not going to treat all the water in the home, generally speaking, but enough for drinking and cooking. That particular system, in addition to removing nitrate, would also have the capacity to remove certain pesticides and other contaminants that might be associated with nitrate. That's the one thing we always let people know, that if they have elevated levels of nitrate, it can serve as an indicator of other potential contaminants. So if the source is agricultural in nature, it's more likely to have pesticides. Oh. It's septic systems, there's other concerns. So that's what I think most people in your situation would do, is to pursue some sort of treatment system.
Okay. And we did have a couple people that called in to ask if we could repeat the online resources for private well testing. Where do they go?
Sure. On DNR's website, which is dnr.wi.gov, you can do a search just on the word wells, and it will take you to a page with information for private well owners, including information about how to test. You may be able to just do a search in your browser for private well testing as well and have that information come up. So we have information, everything from what laboratories are available, you know, how you can get information from the laboratories, and things, as Kevin talked about, you know, it's good for each private well owner to think about what are the possible sources of contamination in your area, depending on where you live. If it's agriculture or maybe there's some industries nearby, that might make you think about different things that you would want to test for. We do encourage all well owners throughout the state to test for bacteria and nitrate every year.
Okay. And let's go back to the phones. We've got Steve in Stoughton on the line. Hi, Steve. What's your question?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. My concern is, so I'd like, my question is really around the guest's thoughts on privatization of water supplies. Maybe that's a heavy subject, but my bigger issue is that when we have administrative changes and we have a public doctrine around water and its use for the public, then we get special interests and, you know, WMC, and we're not changing the standards per se, is what they say, but we're exempting the standards for certain things. Like mining or other industry with special interest money. So I'm kind of, it's like, that's a big issue for me, but I'd like to, I guess, to talk about privatization.
Okay, great. Thank you, Steve. Lisa, you want to handle that one?
Sure. I guess I'm not going to render an opinion about it one way or the other. I mean, what I can say is we do have a series of state laws that are implemented by the Department of Natural Resources and the Public Service Commission that use a framework of public drinking water systems being government entities that are, run by municipal water utilities, so forth. So at this time, we don't have privatization in our major and our larger drinking water systems in Wisconsin, and that would take a law change for something like that to come about.
Okay, great. And something that I think maybe a lot of especially well owners are thinking about is we had a lot of flooding in the last 6 months. How is that affecting water, not only in a well, but I mean, lots of municipalities have the same problem. So, Kevin, you want to tackle that?
For sure, we would recommend or urge some caution anytime somebody on a private well, especially, were in a flood event or suffered from flooding. If the flood water overtops the casing, we know that there's water, surface water going directly down into their well. And there's precautions that they'd want to take to disinfect and chlorinate and then retest to ensure that their well is bacteriologically safe. That's on the serious end, but even just large rain events or, a lot of snowmelt can sometimes change the water level. And those changes in the water level might result in changes in the chemistry of their water. So if you notice kind of sudden changes in color or taste after large rain events, it might be because of the change or that influx of water into the aquifer. And those are not to say that every instance of changes in color or taste are a health-related issue, but those are good times that you'd want to test your water for bacteria, just to evaluate whether the well has been compromised by those flood events. And I would imagine that some of the municipalities suffer some of the same issues in terms of, sudden changes in quality due to flood events.
Okay. Lisa, have you had any experience with that in the last 6 months or so?
Well, I just want to reinforce what Kevin said for private well owners. If your well, the top of your well is overtopped by flood water, you should assume that the well water is contaminated. Don't take a chance on thinking, oh, well, it looks clean, it looks clear. You should assume that it's contaminated if it was overtopped by the flood water. And then it's also really important. This is tough to do when you're, when you're in the aftermath of a major flood, but you need to wait for those floodwaters to recede before you do a disinfection and then sample before you start to drink. So it takes a little bit of patience. It might take a couple weeks before the floodwater recedes, and then you can do the disinfection and make sure that that's working.
Okay. Should people then just have bottled water to be safe?
Well, oftentimes, certainly you want to look for an alternative safe water supply, whether you have access to bottled water or some other source. And when it comes to disinfection, especially in a situation after a well, we do encourage that people use a licensed well professional rather than just, pouring a can of bleach down the drain is not the proper, or down a well is not the proper way to disinfect it. So we really want people to work with a professional who's got experience and can do it correctly.
Is there an online resource then for information about this?
We have information, again, on DNR's website, and we put out a press release every year in the spring or at times after there has been flooding that provide resources for people on well disinfection.
Right. I'll try to get that up on our program note on WPR.org/Larry, so you can go there. And we've got a couple minutes left. What what can you tell people who are listening how they can help keep our water safe? Kevin?
Sure. Everybody that lives in Wisconsin, there's very simple things that we can all do. And some of it goes back to the first caller about making sure that what we do on the landscape, we do those activities as carefully as possible. Other things that I think sometimes we don't talk about enough are, you know, protecting diversity on the landscape. We know that forests and natural areas like grasslands are things that are good for groundwater quality. So in areas where we have intensive maybe agricultural activity or intensive development, making sure we protect some of those areas that are in forests or in grasslands, because we know that they can help buffer or kind of offset some of the negative impacts that come along with more intensive landscape practices. Those are all things that I think are important. You know, there's increased demand or interest in things like cover crops for agricultural systems, and keeping living cover on the landscape will go a long way to helping protect not only our groundwater, but our surface waters as well. And those are all things that we're becoming more conscious of.
Okay. Lisa, what do you have to add to that?
Sure. I would just add, if you're a private well owner, as Kevin has commented before, be aware of your own land use. Make sure you keep your septic system pumped, limit use of pesticides, and dispose of hazardous materials properly. If you're on a municipal drinking water system, be aware of those issues in your community and help your community to protect the area around those public wells.
And should we be concerned about conserving water at this point in this area?
Well, it's always a good idea to conserve water use, particularly in municipal areas. I mean, there's a lot of cost and infrastructure involved in making sure that the water that comes out of your tap is safe, so use it judiciously. We have a lot of water in Wisconsin, so we don't tend to think about that. But water conservation is an important part of maintaining our resource for the future.
Okay, great. Well, thank you both for coming in and giving us all that wonderful information. We've been talking with Kevin Masaryk. He is an outreach specialist for the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point. And Lisa Lehman, she is a private water section chief for the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Up next, we're going to hear about this year's Energy Fair, so stay with us on the Ideas Network.